to exchange you, oh, Michael Schur, Dominican Gods, what is this? It's almost like a power panel. In fact, it could be.
What makes something not a power panel and a power panel?
Okay, so, well, all right. First of all, Fridays are by definition a power panel.
Right.
If this was a Friday, we'd have dropped it 17 seconds
right.
ago. Secondly, power panels used to be four people. Now they're down to three people. So again, this could qualify just depending on the day. And that's it. It's mainly arbitrary and made up. just keeping it clear. So we do have a lot of amazing stories for you guys today. Of course, Trump was in Phoenix. Let's see if my opinion on that surprises you. Okay, McConnell and Trump in a massive political knife fight. And that one has enormous implications. That's probably my favorite story of the day.
It's a great, great political story.
Yeah, and I mean, it's so interesting on so many different levels, including who at the end is winning
right.
with the crowd. It's just amazeballs all around. And then in the second hour, we have horrific stories slash amusing stories from all across the world, including a 14-year-old doing the Macarena in Saudi Arabia. Uh-oh, how did that turn out? And then a poor kid getting killed in Philippines, which just lit the whole country on fire. So amazing, fascinating stories in the news today. Michael Schur leading the proceedings.
Yeah, we'll lead off with our esteemed president. He was in Arizona last night, and I had a chance to cover him in Arizona when he was there. And I will say that for having covered Trump and Sanders and all the other candidates, the places where both Trump and Sanders seem to attract to me the most memorable crowds in both their fervor and their excitement was curiously Arizona. So it doesn't surprise me that the night after giving what was supposed to be a somber and important speech with some details, but mostly lacking any details on Afghanistan, whether there will be a surge or not, the president then sort of did a pivot back to what we came to know as campaigning Donald Trump. This is his favorite venue. He can say whatever he wants to a crowd that will accept him for whatever he says. It was no different in Phoenix last night. Here is your president, Donald Trump.
You know, I'd love if the cameras could show this crowd, because it is rather incredible. It is incredible. It is incredible. As everybody here remembers, this was the scene of my first rally speech, right? The crowds were so big, almost as big as tonight, that the people said right at the beginning, you know, there's something special happening here. How about all week they're talking about the massive crowds that are going to be outside? Where are they? Well, it's hot out. It is hot. I think it's too warm. You know, they show up in the helmets and the black masks, and they've got clubs and they've got everything. Antifa!
Yeah, this is the off-the-cuff, freewheeling Donald Trump. Nomi Jenk, I want to show you, before we get into this discussion about what we just listened to, the crowds. He was talking about how these crowds, almost bigger than when he was first here. Let's see that, Mr. President. Yeah. Almost bigger. That was the empty back of the arena where he was speaking. You know, I think that this is clearly a place where he is most comfortable. The night before, less than 24 hours earlier, he opened his speech on foreign policy by saying, we have to come together as one. We are one people. We are one country. It was a segue out of the Charlottesville talk and into talking about what we need to do in Afghanistan. A different guy showed up the next night.
Yeah, of course. Well, look, when he was doing the Afghanistan speech, I kept mocking him for being on the prompter. And it's not because, like the Republicans with Obama, they discovered a thing called the teleprompter. And they're like, oh my God, it turns out the president's reading. Yeah, I know. They've been doing it a long, long time. It's just that it's particularly stark with Trump, because when he's not reading, it's obvious. He wasn't reading today, it wasn't on a prompter. And part of why the crowd loved it so much, so it's got a huge downside, because the downside is that you get to hear what Trump actually thinks. upside is that his crowd loves it. I mean, the guy's a classic carnival barker. So when he's like, Antifa, I feel like I'm in WrestleMania 27, right?
But you know, if you were out there and you've both been around these Trump people, I don't believe that they know what Antifa is.
No.
I think they just want to listen to this guy vamp, and that's it.
I think that's interesting because if this were Hillary people, he was screaming Hillary people. Right. It would actually help him. But Antifa, his people don't really know what Antifa is. The Antifa people are going to feel more fueled. In fact, I think more people are joining Antifa. I think he's so unfamiliar with the alt left, as Neera Tanden likes to call it, and Joy Reid likes to call it, and Donald Trump likes to call it. He's so unfamiliar with that populist left that didn't go to his side that he actually might be fueling the fire that could take him down eventually. And furthermore, if this is his base, if Arizona is like his loyal base and that was his crowd in Arizona, I would be worried if I were Donald Trump. Because that was a convention center, that was not a stadium.
Right.
I've lived in Arizona, that is not a large place to give a rally. So he should be very concerned about his support at this point.
But US presidents, whoever they've been, certainly in my life, in my conscious life, wherever they go, they draw a crowd. It's not unusual to see a US president draw a huge crowd when he goes on the road. He just turns them into rallies and campaign speeches.
Yeah, and look, and it's kind of entertaining to watch Trump. I'll give him that, and that's why The Apprentice rated well for a long time. So that's why it's perfectly normal for a big crowd to show up there and get super excited.
Yeah.
And look, Antifa's not going to bring him down. Antifa's not a real enough force to have political consequence. And so if you guys are mad at me for saying that, God bless, go forward on that. But Nomi's right that the more you mention them, the bigger they'll grow. Mm-hmm. So Trump calling them out, going, Antifa!
Yeah, it was.
It's just only going to help them.
Completely.
Someone meme that or do a GIF or something. Do that, Antifa!
Right, and he's speaking to the people. I'm going to skip to, I guess this is TA1. Is that something we can go to or not? Forgive
sure.
me. But yeah, this is Chris Pickell saying, President Trump flat lying about news orgs, turning off live cameras as he complains about fake news. And so what happened last night was the president said to everybody, hey, pointing to the news, nobody watches TV anymore. Nobody watches these people. No, they're all a bunch of liars. Meanwhile, everybody who's hearing about it is watching it on television or watching it somehow. The news continues to show this president.
So he's rewritten a lot of the rules, sometimes for the good, but almost never.
Right.
So, and here's another rewritten rule. Like it used to be a thing like, hey, you don't want your lie to be too brazen or obvious. Politicians lie all the time, but they have subtle, nuanced ways of lying. Trump is just like, CNN just turned off their cameras. First of all, how would he know that?
Right.
He's in the middle of the speech, right? Like, what a bizarre thing to make up. Second of all, they didn't. It's enormously provable whether they turned off the cameras or not.
Yeah.
He just doesn't care as long as it gets a good line, you know, good applause there in the crowd.
It may be, but it's also, you know, sometimes he's speaking to the audience on camera, which still, do they not realize they're watching CNN? Are they watching Fox News?
Well, that's the thing. I think so many of them are watching this on Fox, and then a handful of them are in that hall. They all think he's telling them the truth. That's all they need to hear.
You know, I'll go one step further. I guarantee you that if you polled Trump viewers who are watching him
CNN.
On CNN, did CNN turn off the cameras? Half of them would
right,
say,
"Yes, they did." I was watching; it just went right off. So that was the blatant, right? Then there was the subtle lying, the subtle falsities. Let's go listen to the president talking. He was trying to prove to this crowd that he had empathy for what was going on in Charlottesville when it happened, that the remarks he gave afterwards were by this fake news media, by these horrible people in the middle of that hall, that they were misconstrued somehow. So he went to clarify the record, Donald Trump.
So what I did... So what I did, I'm really doing this to show you how damn dishonest these people are. So here's what I said really fast. Here's what I said on Saturday. We're closely following the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. This is me speaking. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. That's me speaking on Saturday, right after the event.
You know, that's not a lie, Nomi Jank. I mean, that's what he said.
That's true.
That's what he said. Let's hear what else he had to say.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides.
It seems like he left out a phrase there when he was repeating it to the crowd.
Yeah, JR, you think that was an accident?
I didn't hear anything different. What are you guys talking about?
No.
I was in the crowd in Phoenix and there was something that swept over us.
You must have been watching CNN. That's what happened to you.
Yeah, and
that's what he does. So for this audience, the ones that are sitting at home watching Fox, the ones that are in that hall, he can go on the air and say, this is what I read. Doesn't it sound perfect? Mm-hmm. That wasn't what was controversial. If he had stopped right there, probably wouldn't have been talked about as much.
Yeah.
Certainly wouldn't have been.
So, look, we've shown poll after poll, even after Charlottesville, 67% of Republicans thought that his reaction was perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And so, of course, if he picks cherry picks one sentence where he denounces Nazis, people go, look at the fake news media criticizing him, even though he criticized Nazis. You know, if you try to explain to those folks, but he also said that both sides were at fault when one side was Nazis and the other side was people protesting Nazis. When one side got killed and the other side didn't, they're like, nuance. I don't do nuance.
Yeah.
Antifa.
Politically correct. You guys are so politically correct with your numbers. Oh my God. So, well, I mean, does this work though in terms of calling out his strategy? I think it works for like the sane people who are watching us, who are watching, you know, mainstream media, whatever you want to call it. But does it work for the Trump base? Like, his numbers are going down.
They are going down, and significantly.
Crazy people are going up.
It's not insignificant. And they're not necessarily going down for the reasons we would think. They're not going down because we keep reminding them what a fool this man can be. They had a whole election campaign to learn that. But they're going down because a lot of Republicans are starting to turn on the president. And I think also because the more that people hear that important people are leaving the reservation, that has an impact on some Republicans.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. And I just saw
what are
Morning
you sure
Consult
about?
Poll where his numbers went back up this week. And they have him all the way at 44%. So I
was that taken after the Afghanistan speech?
Yeah. No, it was taken throughout the week. So it's some of
it's
it didn't
poll.
Even get all of the Charlottesville
right.
response in it, to be fair. But I don't think that people care about important Republicans leaving. I think
no,
they kind of hate important Republicans.
I think the Republicans that voted for him reluctantly, I think that matters to them. And there were enough of them that it put him over. I mean,
and it might have an effect on, if there's this psychological effect of so many Republicans that are lockstep Republicans, you know, distancing themselves from Trump and he's firing people left and right. It's that security within the Republican Party. You know, they would rather have the Republican Party secure to defeat the Democrats and Antifa and Bernie Sanders than, you know, keep Trump.
So here's my sense of it. I think that the crowd, and I don't mean just the crowd in Arizona, I mean his base loves this stuff. They like that he's entertaining. They consider this honest. It's that great Rand Paul line that he told me. I don't know why he's never said it on TV, but where he said Trump's got the truth telling without the truth. It has the appearance of truth telling. Oh, let me tell you how it is, okay? And he's not talking like a standard politician. And then he'll just give you one lie after another, which is.
But it's the audience too, Cenk. It's the people. Because to be fair, most politicians, presidents, people that we've looked at through these same glasses, they also tell the truth without telling the truth. I mean, there are lots of obfuscations and lies and all
but
of
they
that.
Look fake doing but it, his Michael, audience, it's a giant difference.
I don't think so because we've fallen for it for years and years, generations and generations.
Well, we're done with it.
This is a different audience that's falling for it.
But
now, we're not done with it
because
look who won. I mean, we're not done with it at all.
But they don't also believe him either. I mean, there's been polling out saying, do you believe what Donald Trump says?
They sort of don't
and they're
care.
Like, no, but we don't care because
it's
he's
a cult of personality. Yeah.
Or whatever.
I know, but guys, that's what I'm talking about. I don't mean we're done with the lying. I mean, this guy perfected it in a sense. I mean, we're done with the fake, like the polish, the, well, I do declare this is, you know, how we're going to be. And we're the honorable gentleman from Connecticut and Nebraska. Right. Ah, people hate it. They hate it. That's the only reason Trump is popular is because he's the opposite of that. So, you know, a lot of people criticizing this speech vociferously. And we have our own criticism, obviously, including that he's making stuff up. But overall, I thought it was an effective speech to keep his base.
Well, speeches like this are how he won the presidency. Mm-hmm. So everybody who says they're not effective is wrong because he's the president. And this is what he did constantly during the election. But I don't think that you're right. I find the Trump presidency will be an anomaly, not a norm. I find that his success was based largely on his celebrity and the cult of personality. And once he goes away, so too will that. And there will be a return to something that was more similar to the I do declare than to this guy.
Yeah. I think I disagree on that, but that's okay.
That's fine. I don't think we're going to get an I do declare all the time.
We got a lot of them left.
And most of the people are, because that's the discipline. The discipline is I do declare. In any case, and we're not naming names here. How's this for a segue? Neither did the president. Last night, President Trump, one of the sort of overriding elephants in the room last night was the fact that Jeff Flake, the senator from Arizona, the junior Republican senator who's going to be primary challenged by someone that vocally is being supported by Donald Trump, he's from Arizona. His name was in the room. John McCain as well, who, didn't vote for the president's health care plan. Well, plan is generous on my part, but whatever, the bill that they put up. And so Donald Trump was, a lot of people were wondering if he was going to call them out. And here's what he didn't do.
They all said, Mr. President, your speech was so good last night. Please, please, Mr. President, don't mention any names. So I won't. I won't. No, I won't vote. One vote away, I will not mention any names. Very presidential, isn't it? Very presidential. And nobody wants me to talk about your other senator, who's weak on borders, weak on crime, so I won't talk about him. Nobody wants me to talk about him. Nobody knows who the hell he is. And now, see, I haven't mentioned any names, so now everybody's happy.
Yeah.
That's great A entertainment right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so The good news for him is that that base loves it. They love it when he ignores the advice of his advisors and counsel. Mm-hmm. They love it when he attacks people, even if it's fellow Republicans. So those boos for Flake, you're like, boo, boo, Jeff Flake.
From a room full of people who almost certainly voted for Jeff Flake.
Almost all of them. No question.
And by the way, Jeff Flake has voted for 93% of the things that Donald Trump wants.
Right.
So, and against Obama.
But in terms of political strategy, that's a nightmare. So it might be okay for Trump, although that again has its limits. But for the Republican Party overall, this guy's a suicide bomber. Mm-hmm. He went into the party and he's like, okay, I'm going to destroy McConnell, McCain, Collins, Murkowski, Flake. Now, is it in service of getting anything passed? No, nothing ever gets passed. And it's less likely to get passed now. But Allahu Akbar. Right? Yeah. So,
and the interesting thing about Arizona is there's this very strong, it's a libertarian state. This is not exactly the same as Donald Trump's base, even though there's an overlap and they're very passionate there. You know, these are people who voted for Jeff Flake and for John McCain. And John McCain did have a tough race a couple of years ago, but they voted for them because they were worried about government waste, that's also why Bernie Sanders did so well. He talked about economics. These are economic voters. Jeff Flake is the guy who does the government waste you know, booklet every year, or the one with like, oh, there were shrimp on treadmills, right, and the government wasted, you know, $10 million on that. That's the guy who does that, and people love it. They eat it up, and come election time.
The shrimp or the rhetoric?
The rhetoric.
Okay.
I don't think anybody loves the shrimp on treadmill.
not in Arizona, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last place you want to have shrimp.
I've sadly tried it in the middle of the desert.
Right. Okay, so look, the media criticized this speech as unhinged. I don't think so. I think it was as hinged as Trump is. I think it's the same thing that we saw in the campaign. I don't think it was any more unhinged than normal. Yes, he attacked the media over and over. Yes, he lied, but that's Trump 101. So I'm not at all surprised by that. But at the end of the day, was it an effective speech? Effective in rallying his base, yes. But for the Republican Party overall and actually passing policy, it was just a stupid way to go. And,
right. Mm-hmm.
And because those guys, there's an excellent chance that they're all gonna lose their reelections. Because now the Democrats certainly don't like the Jeff Flakes and the Mitch McConnells of the world. And now half the Republicans don't like them. That's a terrible idea for how to win elections.
Yeah, the Senate electoral map, it still favors the Republicans, and it's a great year, 2018, for Republican senators. But if this kind of thing keeps happening, Jeff Flake was not supposed to be a vulnerable senator. He's
right.
popular there. He was a congressman there. Yes, the makeup of Arizona is beginning to mirror Nevada a little bit in the way that people are moving to Arizona. It's a different kind of more leaning.
It turned blue in 2006.
Yeah, and leaning blue. And so there are opportunities there. But this is not the way to play the politics. And it's also not the time to rally the base. There's nothing around which to rally. A year ago, he was running for president. There's no policy that he's taking on the road, which is typically when you do rally the base, right? When you get them making phone calls. It's August. They're going to get a senator's office and say, hey, the president, there's nothing going on, right?
It is no strategy behind
this. There's not. That's what I'm saying. So you're talking about rallying the base. Great, you rallied the base.
But I don't understand, why did he do it the day after his Afghanistan speech, which you had stupid members of the mainstream media saying, oh, he sounded presidential. I don't get it.
But enough of them said that he didn't, too. Enough of them had a lot of problems with the way he engaged Pakistan and India there. So I don't think that was such a great, you know, as they say, home run for the president, even from many people watching the media. But he thought it was. So he goes, on the heels of his great statesmanship the night before, he says, I'm going to go out now into the country and rally behind that. Of course, this was planned before the other. But
yeah, we're overanalyzing it. It's just for his ego. He just loves to hear
the
crowd.
Well, that's it, right, of course. But maybe that's why they did the night before when they did it, so he could then take it to Arizona. You know, one of the familiar themes, this was all about the familiar themes that he brings out to these rallies, was, of course, building the wall, something that he talks about all the time, but also to the Arizona audience. And here's Donald Trump talking about his wall.
And we are building a wall on the southern border, which is absolutely necessary. Build that wall. Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall.
If we have to close down the government, I mean, that you can talk about the I do declare people, but they're watching that, and they're the ones in the government right now, and they're being threatened by their president that if we don't build the wall, we're going to shut the government down, which is the least responsible thing. Every Republican will tell him that. Every Democrat will tell him that.
Oh, he doesn't care.
And he doesn't care. No, of course he doesn't.
He might shut down the government. Look, he bluffs a lot, but he might not be bluffing about this because he doesn't understand the consequences. So in order for you to be nervous about a bluff, you have to be cognizant of the fact that you could lose your whole, you know, pile. You could lose all your money if you go all in this analogy, right? He's not cognizant of that at all. He's like, what, this is money? What do you mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what game are we playing, right?
He doesn't have leverage here.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't have leverage in this situation because if he, you know, yes, they're gonna have to have a budget. Nobody wants there to be a government shutdown as a result, but he just went through this with healthcare and it didn't work then and it's not gonna work with the Republicans now because guess what? That guy he's demonizing is gonna stand up and say, I know Arizona more than anybody here. I know that guess what? The border wall is already there.
Yeah.
And you know, John McCain and Jeff Flake will have to go to the border and show, look at, here's this border wall that already exists on the border of the Arizona. Go to Texas, they've got a river. Yeah. They need a wall.
So as I've said many times, this idea of carrots and sticks is perfectly good politics. And you could play hardball and threaten someone's reelection and get them to maybe buckle. And if you get rid of them, it sends a message to others. But that's, but in order to do that, you have to do that in a strategic and smart way, which Trump is absolutely incapable of. So for example, two of the people he threatens most are John McCain and Lisa Murkowski. They just had elections. They won't be up for 6 years, right, when John McCain will be 184 years old. Right? So it is, it's such a stupid, empty threat. He doesn't know what he's doing. And on the government shutdown, people will say to him, oh, Mr. President, you can't shut the government down. That would ruin our credit and it would spike interest rates and it could hurt the economy and stuff. He'd be like, what? Did you just tell me I can't do it? Okay? And there's some chance he'd do it.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't understand the consequences and doesn't care.
He also probably in the back of his mind thinks, well, if the government shut down, the Senate and the House are too, and then they can't impeach me. So
that's a fair point.
There's a way he does it. Finally, from Arizona, one of the other topics that had been bandied about during the day was that Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the very divisive, racist, and I would say overbearing former sheriff of Maricopa County, there where Houston sits. The question is whether or not he's going to be pardoned after having been indicted. They said that the president will not address this. So of course, the president, being the president, did this.
Was Sheriff Joe convicted for doing his job? That's what. He should have had a jury, but you know what? I'll make a prediction. I think he's going to be just fine, okay? I won't do it tonight because I don't want to cause any controversy. Is that okay? All right. But Sheriff Joe can feel good.
Far be it from him starting controversy. Sheriff Joe can feel good.
Okay, so a couple of things about this. First, Young Turks did a story about this yesterday, and Andrew Jones pointed out that in order to get a pardon, you have to go through a great number of steps, including saying you did do it and being contrite about it. Sheriff Joe's appealing the conviction right now. He doesn't admit responsibility at all. You have to serve 5 years in prison. He hasn't gone to prison. He doesn't even face 5 years. He faces a maximum of 6 months. It says you can't do this pardon in any way, shape, or form. But Trump doesn't know that.
And that's likely why they're not doing, why he didn't do it last night. He's going to be fine. So what's he? He's going to lean on some prosecutor. I also said that he was indicted, but he was in fact, of course, convicted. And that's all they wanted to hear. They don't need the facts. They don't need to hear
that. And the press isn't. They're buying into it. If there's one thing Donald Trump does know, it's the press. And so it was an entire story yesterday for hours, yeah, on CNN. Will he or will he not pardon Joe Arpaio? God forbid somebody actually use their fact checkers to figure this out.
You're a news organization. You are the fact checkers. Find out how you do a pardon, or just watch our video from yesterday. So the other thing about this is that the advisors kind of have the most brutal job, and I have no sympathy for them because they work for Donald Trump. But whatever they tell him, they're like, okay, now, man-child president, we're going to tell you you can't pardon Joe Arpaio in the speech tonight. So don't bring it up. Okay, I'm going to go. Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, I'm going to go tell the press you're not bringing it up tonight. Okay, yep, okay, got you. Sarah, okay, I got it. They tell me I can't mention it, but I'm a man child. So I'm going to tell you about it anyway. Saying that you're not allowed to talk about it and talking about it is talking about it.
Yeah. See, I think he does it intentionally. I think I think all of them are in on it. It's a messaging ploy, like get them excited, get it in the press, distract away from the criticisms about the Afghanistan speech, distract away from whatever thing he did 20 minutes before. And now he can talk about it in his speech and say, but I'm not going to do it now. Get a big applause line. I'll come back later for it, maybe. Or
yeah, no, I agree with you that Trump took it on purpose. Partly because they told him he can, and he is a man child. But partly because it does work. People love that he's a rebel, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think his advisors are in on the ploy, because
I think Roger Stone is.
Yeah. Oh, some are. Some. Yes. Yeah. But most of the advisors, if you believe the leaks, are like, oh, for Christ's sake! Like, what did we just tell you?
Yeah.
You can sense of what the advisors think of him. When he was on the Truman balcony looking at the solar eclipse without the glasses.
Yeah.
They're like, don't look! You know, you only say that if you think the guy's an idiot.
Right.
Right? You see what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to tell Obama that. You don't have to tell, I imagine, even Reagan, right?
Right.
Like, they know, like, they're on pins and needles. He's gonna do something stupid. He's gonna do something stupid. Oh, I knew it. Don't look!
Right. Also, presidents are examples. Obama and Reagan would know. You put the glasses on, even if you don't want to. If you want to look direct, because people are going to be watching, because you're the president. You're and it also, I think, speaks to the fact that John Kelly has not yet made a difference, in the White House.
No,
nor do we expect. And we'll get to something a little bit more about that quickly. We have to take a break, but quickly, I want to talk to you about some of the crowds last night. Have you heard the president talk about how big the crowds were? Of course, Twitter abuzz with it. Republican Twitter showing us images like this huge, huge crowd. Look at those people outside of where the Cleveland Cavaliers won the NBA championship in 2016. That is not the Trump rally, even though it was put out there as if it was that. It doesn't look at all like Arizona, but that was the kind of message that was going around, when in fact the Trump rally sizes looked a little bit more like this. Here are some of the images of what was really going on, but there was no basketball being played. There were, however, protests outside, and some of them got a little ugly. Trump, in a way, in those first remarks, I think, and you can play some of it behind this, but so got to talking about those people outside almost like he continues to incite, as he did during the election, this kind of activity. He loves when it happens. And this is what's happening outside afterwards, protesters. And some of the backlash was pretty harsh as well.
Yeah, so the two different issues. One is the memes that the Republicans are putting out. Mm-hmm. So the conservatives are putting out that picture of the Cavaliers stadium pretending that it was the Trump rally from yesterday. And then ironically, they'll go call everybody else fake news. Mm-hmm. It's just projection. It's a way to muddy the water. They know that what they do is lie after lie. And then they know that if they accuse the other side of lying, you'll be confused enough to call it 50-50. Mm-hmm. It's actually, in that sense, a smart strategy.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the reaction here, from the protesters of Trump. By all accounts, the cops did the pepper balls that they threw in there, which sounds funny. When people try to move the barricades, the protesters did after Trump is done. Well, if that is accurate, I side with the cops. When you've got the president, as much as we dislike him, he is the president and he's in the building, and you've got a large crowd who fervently dislikes him trying to move the barricades out of the way. And even if you're not worried about the president, you've got the president's supporters coming out, that's a potentially really ugly situation. Now, as to the amount of force being used, I have no way of judging that, right? I don't know if that was too much, too little, etc. I don't think it was too little because it worked.
Yeah.
But don't move the barricades. That's a really bad idea.
Having been in those situations before, covering them, and as a protester, sometimes they use the excuse of you've moved the barricades and you're in a situation, and we covered this in January. I was at there was a protest in front of Trump Tower in New York City, where all of the protesters were being contained in an area, and the reporters in the same area, and they couldn't move. And the barricades were moving because there were like, 400 people in a block that were being contained. And so they're moving, and it escalates that way. Granted, the New York City police, which is by no means an example for how you handle crowds, and they have their own issues. I think they're a little bit more used to this than the Arizona Police Department, which I worked in Arizona. I did a lot of campaign work there. That's a city, the mayor is a Democratic mayor, Mayor Stanton. They held events prior to Trump coming out where they had all these Democrats lined up, elected officials, Ruben Gallego, representative, giving speeches. So they were prepared for this. I wonder if this was the state police or the city police. I can't really tell, because that actually does play a factor into this kind of stuff, how you handle protests.
But we haven't seen this type of reaction to presidents in a very long time. I mean, probably since George H.W. Bush, after going into Afghanistan and Iraq. And even then, it was different than the tenor here, and it wasn't everywhere, which doesn't mean it shouldn't have been. But so this kind of thing happening, where the president is inside giving this glorious speech to these, sycophants, is it's pretty amazing.
Let me just one last thing on this. Look, I'm not on both sides of the issue. I'm trying to thread the needle
both
on
sides,
being
both
the,
sides. Many sides.
Yeah, many sides do. Many sides. No, on what is the right and appropriate reaction?
Sure.
So Nomi is clearly right about the situation she went through, and that does happen from time to time. At the same time, those cops got to be thinking, oh my God, look at what happened in Charlottesville. I have got to maintain order here. And I've got pretty sizable crowds on both sides. Maybe they're not as large as Trump makes them out to be, or the Republicans do, but you got a decent sized crowd on Trump's side, and certainly a decent sized crowd of protesters. If those guys meet, we're going to have mayhem. So that's a really tough situation for the cops to be in. So let's keep it real on that. Now, on the other side, I will say, generally speaking, the cops in America have an enormous right-wing protester bias. What I mean by that is, if you've got right-wing protesters, time to put on the kids' gloves, right? Oh, okay, wait. Bundy guys, they've got guns and they're pointing it at our heads. Well, let's nice and easy. Nazis rallying, they should protect their right to march, even though it's maddening and infuriating, but it's a free speech issue, and the courts asked them to do that in Charlottesville. Having said that, my God, kids' gloves all around. The next day, the kid shows up, and he got kicked out of his college. I don't think he should have, but to honor the Confederacy, he's got a giant long gun on him and a handgun. And as the cops are escorting him out, and he didn't do anything wrong, and the cops are just trying to protect him. But they're like, they let him in the cop car with the gun.
Oh my God.
Like, there's no way a black guy is getting let into a cop car with a gun when people that were aligned with him, he didn't do it, okay, but ideologically aligned with him, just killed someone the day before. There's no way, right? So every time there's a left-wing protest, here we go, let's no problem, batons, pepper gas, etc. Right-wing protest, oh, be careful. So, I mean, you almost every time. So that's also the reality of America.
Yep. And we're going to see it continue to play out. When we come back, we are going to have more on this. We're going to talk to James Clapper. We'll talk to Valerie Plame. We'll talk to Mitch McConnell. We have a great list of guests. Come on back after the break.
All right, back on the Young Turks.
Got to explain why we're laughing. We're just the tune of tequila.
Someone tweeted out an Antifa video. It's doing it again. All right, I'm ruining it.
To the tune of tequila, right.
Yes.
Let me read a bunch of comments for you guys that are fun. Combabus writes, and last night 45 was speaking out of many sides of his mouth. Many sides. That's really funny. Admiral Marston says, Combabus, you get a t-shirt. You got a LOL on that one. ShopTYT.com for merch. Admiral Marston says his loyal base won't be bothered by what they are being told are bad Republicans by Trump, because he's the dear leader and he's 100% honest, at least to them. They feel that way. Jay says, Michael, sure, there was no elephant in the room. It's on a beach eating peanuts in New Jersey. That's not right, Jay. That's not right. Okay. Chris Bradshaw says, so this is what Trump looks like when he thinks he's being clever. Joshua Olson says, Cenk, I hope that Nomi is on Old School tonight. Please make it happen. Interesting. We do have a very special progressive guest for you guys on Old School. I hadn't.
Not me.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, we hadn't discussed it. But we'll tell you after the next break. The random progressive in town is Adam Green from P-Triple
C. Oh, yeah. Why didn't he tell me this?
I'm going to write him a note. Right? And he's going to stop in and do Old School tonight. So that's fun for everybody. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member to get Old School. It's a great show. And finally, Woke Poppy says, TYT needs an I do declare t-shirt ASAP. We are hashtag too strong.
Woke Poppy would get a free one every day too for his
I love Woke Poppy.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, everybody does. All right, what's this? Let's
wrap up the Trump stuff, but there's some, you know, some interesting things that came up afterwards and from, I think, some important people to hear from. James Clapper, the former director of National Intelligence, was on. You know, CNN didn't have their cameras on all night. Until James Clapper showed up. James Clapper came in, talked to Don Lemon, and he had some stern things to say about the reality of being apprehensive at best about this president.
I don't know when I've listened and watched something like this from a president that I found more disturbing. Having some understanding of the levers of power that are available to a president if he chooses to exercise them. I found this downright scary and disturbing.
Are you questioning his fitness?
Yes, I do. I really question his ability to his fitness to be in this office, and I also am beginning to wonder about his motivation for it. Maybe he is looking for a way out.
Is he a threat to national security, the president?
Well, he certainly could be. Having some understanding of the levers that a president can exercise, I worry about, frankly, the access to nuclear codes. If he, in a fit of pique, he decides to do something about Kim Jong-un, there's actually very little to stop him.
A fit of pique, that's, you know, that's reacting with resentment to somebody slighting you in any way. It seems like he would be completely prone to that.
Yeah, so this is part of the reason I'm annoyed at Trump for making me agree with guys like James Clapper. I got no love for Clapper. He lied about warrantless wiretapping of the American people. I thought he was flippant about the drone strikes that killed civilians. I think he was one of my least favorite people in the Obama administration by a long shot. And I think he's been part of the establishment in all the worst ways. But having said that, in this case, he's clearly right. The guy has moments of peak and gets agitated, and Clapper, having been part of the director of national intelligence, knows that there isn't very much stopping the president from launching nukes. So if he wants to do it in a moment of emotional outburst, he could do it. And boy, that's a super scary thought, because you know he has them. And then at some point, I mean, is everybody supposed to resign? You can't. He can push the button. And the fact that Trump can push the button is enormously scary.
But this is not new. This is not new news. This is something that people have been saying since Hillary Clinton was running against him. I hear him. I agree with you. But to reiterate the same things we've been saying over and over, I mean, at what point will it make a difference? I mean, it's already causing hysteria. I mean, we can call it what it is. The markets are going up and down. Sometimes they're okay, sometimes they're not okay. I mean, is that how CNN is trying to create hysteria, or is it having hysteria on the streets? I mean, I think this is just the same thing over and over. At what point are we going to have enough James Clappers on CNN for CNN to say it's time?
It may not come, but it may come by having people who have the ability, the levers of power that he refers to do something about this presidency. I want to go, this is a little self-indulgent of me, but I saw Jim Fallows a tweet. Storm, is that what they call it when
yes.
It's a lot in a row, a tweet storm? Jim Fallows writes for The Atlantic. He's a fantastic journalist. He agrees with us on just about everything.
This is,
I'm going to read these quickly. You're going to watch them as I read them. This is what Jim Fallows had to say after the speech. I've heard presidential speeches from JFK onward, some good, some bad, some memorable, some boring, some too long, and some elegantly short. Some I agreed with, some made me grit my teeth, some read from prompter, some improvised on through any some pair you want. And in some of them, presidents have let their anger seep through the normal pose of presidential distance. See the thoughts of R. Nixon. And then we move on those whose support he needs, starting with McCain and Flake and extending around the world. And then we have ex-Sheriff Joe. Effectively, Trump promised to pardon Arpaio. Whether he'll realize that tomorrow, who knows? Imagine if Eisenhower gave these winks about those resisting school integration in Little Rock, or JFK about Bull Connor. This is not how presidents have ever sounded before. It struck me because I like his writing, but it through the scope of history, what we're dealing with, and this goes back to our I do declare conversation and how I hope that this presidency is an anomaly compared to some of those other presidencies. Eisenhower did declare, Obama did declare, but I do think that there is something about the way that this guy operates that when I hear Jim Fallows put it in that context, it's just really important to appreciate.
Well, I think that what Clapper was getting at, to Nomi's point, is what is different. He said, he questions his fitness. That is a thing that's now rising as a talking point from the establishment, which means that there are things building behind the scenes. Mm. They didn't get there before, they're there now. And it's one thing for Clapper, who's in Obama's administration, to say it. It's another thing when Bob Corker last week said it. He questioned the president's stability and his fitness for office, his competence. Well, that's a very Republican senator from a very Republican state saying that. And so when Clapper says maybe he's looking for a way out, whether they amount to anything or not, there is definitely talk behind the scenes in Washington about how do we get this guy out? He's a danger. Yeah. He's not a danger to the establishment anymore. If he was, there'd be a part of me that found that interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Not in this way, right? But he's a danger to the Republic and to the world. Because, it's one thing when Clapper authorizes drone strikes that are way out of bounds. It's another thing when you authorize a nuclear strike that's out of bounds.
And we will have a little bit more behind the scenes when we come back. This one takes us to Mitch McConnell and his dealings with Donald Trump. You're watching The Young Turks.
All right, back on The Young Turks, Cenk, Michael, and Nomi with you guys today. Some great tweets again today in this segment. Rye writes in, by the way, hashtag TYT Live to talk to us during the show on Twitter. Could also use YouTube Super Chat. I'm going to get to that in a second. But Rye tweeted, and I worry more about Trump after he's been in office. He's so boastful, not sure what would stop him from revealing US secrets. look, if he knows any secrets, he's about to reveal them whether he's in or out of office. Right.
He has actually. And he's had a few tweets where he's like,
that's true.
Released information.
You get the feeling that he doesn't even know all the secrets because they don't want to tell them.
Oh, no way. No way. Yeah. I guarantee you there's a conversation like this in the something like this, as you'll see. Should we tell him who really killed JFK? Oh, no. No way.
We would know about aliens at this point if Trump actually knew.
Oh my God! Well, that's the one upside. That's the one upside. If the government's hiding something, we're gonna find out soon enough.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Because Trump can't hide it. They're like, he's like Area 51. It's true. Oh my God.
And there'd be a rally there.
Yeah.
They built a wall.
All right. Sean McNamara writes in. Love the first hour today. Best panelists. Best conversations. 10 out of 10. Oh,
look at that.
Rock and roll. And Hans asks, if Trump is removed from office, do you think the country will move into complacency because of the lesser evil? Look, man, if Trump's thrown out of office, more likely he'll resign. There'll be mayhem. I don't think we'll get complacency. My prediction is the establishment media powers down. They're like, oh, Pence, everything's fine. Let's do giant tax cuts. So we're back to regular order, right?
There is the real possibility that that happens, right? That they get lulled into this sense of, oh, that episode's behind us, anything else is better, and then it's Mike Pence gets a free pass.
Definitely. Yeah. Like, I would be shocked if that didn't happen. But that's the media. The country's a different thing, right? And so the Trump guys will be furious. They'll be mad at the Republicans. Then the Democratic establishment will want to go back to the regular course of order as well. But the progressives will say, no, I mean, we've yet begun to
fight. It's a little bit like what happened after Nixon. We have stories to get to, but you know, everybody thought, oh, the Ford would have an easy time, but it was roiled. I mean, people were at each other all the time.
So we need Pence to resign first, like Agnew resigned.
Right. Yeah.
Just find something on him, guys.
But who would he pick? Right.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. There are no good choices.
He would pick Lou Barletta. He would pick some horrible congressperson.
Yeah. All right. Dave from Super Chat wrote in. I just want to say this because it's fun. I want Cenk to be my cousin. Okay.
Why your cousin, not your brother?
I know. Yeah. But that's much better these days, because these days I'm getting a lot of I wish you were my dad.
Oh.
So.
You are a father.
Cousin makes you younger.
Yeah, cousin somehow makes me younger. Yeah. I'll take cousin.
That's good.
Okay.
All right, cuz. We go now to Mitch McConnell, the majority leader of the Senate, an article by Alex Burns and Jonathan Martin in the New York Times, talking about what is going on behind the scenes in the Senate, how McConnell and the president have been fuming at each other, both directly and out of each other's earshot. It's fascinating political stuff, because a lot of what has to happen for the president to be able to quote unquote do well is to get some of these things like tax cuts and infrastructure passed in some way. And McConnell does not like what the president's doing to some of his colleagues. This is Mitch McConnell saying, President Trump, or this is the article, President Trump and Senator Mitch McConnell have not spoken to each other in weeks. And McConnell has privately expressed uncertainty that Mr. Trump will be able to salvage his administration after a series of summer crises. And I think it's important that we talk about Mitch McConnell saying this, because Mitch McConnell has for a long time been someone who is saying, stay the course, stay the course. Everything's going to be all right. We're on the same page. We want to get the same things done. But now he's saying he doesn't see this president perhaps making it work.
Yeah, this is definitely something way more significant than we've had before, where you've got not just one particular Republican senator. So McCain never liked him, Lindsey Graham never liked him, except when he's declaring war. They're like, yes, right? But Mitch McConnell just wants to get to the tax cuts already, right?
Yeah.
He just wants to be able to get some policy wins for his donors. So for him to talk about how the Republican president might not make it to the end, that's amazing. Now, it's only not amazing because it's Trump, but for it to have happened to any other president would be unbelievable. It'd be the biggest news story there was maybe in their entire term. Mm-hmm. If their own majority leader turned on him and thought, you shouldn't finish the term. Imagine if Harry Reid said that about Obama. God.
These things aren't said. I mean, that Mitch McConnell in his position of power, Nomi, is saying these things. It's unprecedented so far in these 8 months that we've had this president.
I guess my question is, okay, great. And what leverage do you have against Trump? Because if they block anything, it just helps the Democrats, which are at their weakest point since 1929, and then it hurts their reelection. They're in this stuck, they're just stuck in this position, just as the centrist Democrats, I think, are as well. Because if they side with the centrist Republicans,
here's the thing. I think what it does is that it's, you know, every kind of drip, drip, drip of away from Trump, drip, 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 probably not the right sort of example. But I'm just saying that any time you see a weakening of this president and his standing on Capitol Hill, it hurts him, you know, exponentially now that Mitch McConnell says this. What's going to happen is probably nothing, because as Cenk told us before and he'll tell us now, Mitch McConnell is not going to do anything about this. He wants to get things passed. He's still a conservative Republican. What did he say, Cenk, that you were telling us?
So he after the New York Times story came out and it became huge news, he then put out a statement, McConnell did, saying, no, the president and I are working towards our shared goals. And he talked about fighting ISIS and tax reform. So in other words, we both really, really want those tax cuts. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, he's totally full of crap. Of course not. This story is true. It's well sourced. I mean, and it has incredible details, including that when they were on the phone on August 9th, it became, they started cursing at each other and yelling at each other. I don't know McConnell in person. All I've ever seen him is obviously on camera, but he doesn't seem like much of a yeller, more of a, you know, retreating into his shell, the turtle that he is. But if you've got McConnell cursing at the president. I don't know if it was back and forth on the cursing and shouting back and forth. That's amazing.
And then on August 10th at 3:54 in the morning, this is the day after or the very early morning after, Trump tweets, this is TA7, Trump tweets, "Can you believe that Mitch McConnell, who screamed repeal and replace for 7 years, couldn't get it done? Must repeal and replace Obamacare." So he called him out after whatever their screaming match was. And let's just go on into the article a little bit more. McConnell has fumed over Mr. Trump's regular threats against fellow Republicans and criticism of Senate rules, and questioned Mr. Trump's understanding of the presidency in a public speech. Mr. McConnell has made sharper comments in private, describing Mr. Trump as entirely unwilling to learn the basics of governing. So this is all about Dean Heller, and it's about the senator from Nevada. It's about Jeff Flake. It's about the president publicly calling out his colleagues. Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, said, "Hey, you know, we have Article 5 here, an allusion to the NATO rules, where you attack one of us, you attack all of us." Mm-hmm. Certainly within that caucus, that is really probably one of the things that's setting McConnell off.
And my theory is that the only people that it benefits at this point, and I'll get to the Democrats in a second, for impeachment is the centrist Republicans that are in power, because they need their tax cuts no matter what. And Trump is, who knows if he can get it through, if he's going to actually be able to rally this stuff. It's 50-50 for them. But for the Democrats, either way they lose. You impeach Trump, you still get these tax cuts, you still get the Republicans in power. And by the way, they're going to be more effective at getting all the proposals through if we don't win in the midterms, which my guess is we probably won't, because we have no Democratic Party. So the Democrats are screwed no matter what. They've got Trump and his fascism, and then they've got Pence and his Republican agenda just sweeping through easily.
So let's break down McConnell versus Trump, what their different priorities are. So Michael mentioned why McConnell's pissed, because he's attacking his fellow Republicans. He's also attacking McConnell over and over, and it's a great point. I hadn't remembered that it was the day after the call that he tweeted that angry tweet about McConnell. And McConnell's also worried about, hey, look, we got to raise the debt ceiling. We have to do just like elementary stuff. And this guy is so stupid that we might not even be able to execute the most elementary stuff, because he doesn't know how to govern. He doesn't know anything. Look, remember that Trump was in a meeting with the Senate Republicans when somebody was talking about the tax cuts within the repeal of Obamacare. And he's like, no, tax cuts are later. They're like, no, Mr. President, that's a different bill. Within this bill are also tax cuts. He's like, no, they're not. And they're like, oh my God, he doesn't know anything.
Right. He was shocked.
He doesn't know anything.
What he didn't know about that healthcare bill.
Yes, he's never, of course he hasn't read it. He hasn't read a summary of it. He hasn't read any of it.
He doesn't take briefings.
Yeah.
He willfully and openly does not take briefings.
Now, so that's why McConnell's upset, because this is an absolute disaster, both for the Republican Party and legislatively. I mean, they can't get anything done. The reason Trump's upset, sure, it's embarrassing that they couldn't repeal Obamacare, even though he promised it, etc. But no. As the New York Times points out, he was even more animated about what he intimated was the Senate leader's refusal to protect him from investigations of Russian interference in the 2016 election. That's why Trump's mad. He's like, hey, your job is to protect me. And McConnell's like, no, it's not. Not my job.
Jim Comey got fired for that, right? I mean, yeah, for not protecting the president against us.
And McConnell.
Look, as a fairly unethical, I've never seen McConnell care about ethics before in my life. As a guy who cares only about winning and politics, and who will brazenly switch sides, filibusters terrible, the filibuster is great, you know, on and on and on, right? That guy would protect you normally if you were a normal president and you're trying to get things, but he's not going to protect you from a criminal investigation where he would then be culpable. Besides which, how the hell would he even protect you from that? Like, so again, Trump not understanding, McConnell doesn't have anything to do with a special counsel, but he's like, why don't you protect me? And by the way, guys, how guilty is he? He's yelling at everybody, why don't you protect me? Why don't you protect me? From what? If you didn't do anything, why are you so incredibly panicked that you're pulling people over from the side of the road going, why won't you protect me from the Russian investigation?
Yeah. And if you look at his support among members that supported him early on, they're not out there campaigning for him. They're silent.
You know. Well, that's what I think a month off in August gets you. You know, you're back in your district, and people are starting to say, "Whoa, what's even Republicans are saying that mm-hmm. they're back home in their districts, and they're getting earfuls from their constituents."
Yeah. So, last thing on this is what's also really, really important. There are no winners here. except hopefully progressives, and the rest of the country eventually.
In like 10 years.
Right.
Just stay tuned.
But between these two sides, first of all, when Trump loses all the Senate Republicans, as he's in the middle of losing, and nobody protected you from the Russian investigation, and they found real stuff on you, those Senate Republicans are the ones that are going to walk over the White House and go, "You're done, son."
Yeah. Right.
So, they, especially if you know you did it, as Trump knows, obviously, right, based on his reactions, right? You idiot! You should be trying to work with those Senate Republicans at all costs. They're your last line of defense. You haven't gotten to that yet. Mm-hmm. Like right now, there's nothing McConnell can do. Later, there's a lot McConnell can do.
Right.
Right. So antagonizing him today is so monumentally stupid. Thank God for that. Now on McConnell's side, oh my God, his approval ratings are so abysmal. They're destroyed. Trump ruined them. So in Kentucky, he's down to 18% approval. And Trump's at 60%. Holy cow, he's more than tripling him. So the disapproval for McConnell in Kentucky is 74%. I've never seen numbers like this for a majority leader.
And when Congress has an 8%, that number is unbelievable. When Congress has an 8% approval rating and the second biggest leader in Congress is out there, and his approval rating is not going to be much better than that. And
but
that's
they're very
what's
popular
happened
in their own districts. And if he's not popular in
his own state, in his own
state,
for sure. I'm just saying, in general, the president is more popular than the people he's picking on in this case. And,
you know,
and that's within the party.
When Donald Trump is impeached, you know, is it legal for him to go run for Senate in Kentucky?
No. Well, he could get Mrs. Mnuchin to campaign for him down there. That would be easy.
Oh, yes, with their bags.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, look, when these guys are up for re-election and Trump has turned their own base against them, they're in for a world of hurt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it is because of Trump, because Rand Paul is at 39% in the same state, and he's mainly kept out of the spotlight. And Trump has not attacked Rand Paul, he's attacked McConnell. So it's mainly because of Trump's attacks that McConnell's numbers are so damn low. And I don't know that you can recover from an 18% approval rating. So it's an excellent chance that Trump walked in the building, blew the place up, and the Republican senators will lose, and so will Trump.
Yeah.
So like I said, there's no winners in that fight except the American people,
right,
eventually.
And one real loser in that fight is your Secretary of Transportation, Mrs.
Right.
Mitch McConnell. That must be a tough place for Elaine Chao to be, at home with Mitch McConnell and serving Donald Trump during the day in his cabinet.
That's okay. They have millions of dollars to cushion them when they fall.
Right.
Okay. We're way over, but I love the Robert Lee story, so super quick.
I'm going to tell this very quickly.
Yes.
The ESPN has moved one of their announcers from their a game against the University of Virginia versus College of William Mary. Go Wahoos, go UVA. And they're moving him to another game because his name is Robert Lee. Reuters today tweeted out that ESPN is moving a Confederate doppelganger. Doppelganger meaning somebody who is a double, looks exactly like. Let's show you Robert Lee and Robert E. Lee here to show you the doppelgangers that they are right
Wait,
there.
Which one was the general?
he wore a tie, so. But that doesn't give it away. That must be the guy on the left. This is, you know, a ridiculous story on the one hand, because I think that the intent, and here's what ESPN said about it, the intent that ESPN had here was just to kind of avoid any kind of controversy, and it was not a judgment on Robert Lee, but they kind of blew it.
Yeah. So I mean, at first blush, it's preposterous.
Right.
So
at second blush, it is too.
And on third blush, preposterous. Okay, so not a defense of it, but I think that the only thing I'll say that it is, and when I first read it last night, I was like, ESPN, for Christ's sake, that is so dumb. So don't mistake me that there's no question it was not the right move. The only defense of it is that it has now been twisted to mean they were trying to avoid offending people. And that's not what they were trying to do. And they've said over and over again, no, we were just trying to not catch grief. Like, hey, you knuckleheads, why'd you put a guy named Robert Lee at the UVA game? haha, you're so stupid for arranging it like that. And partly based on their statements, they keep saying, we mutually agreed. We were trying to protect him.
Which I do believe, by the way. I mean, listen, this guy would have had to, this I do declare. I think this guy would have had to endure a lot of grief, a lot of memes, a lot of tweets, a lot of, you know, and for them to say, why don't you just do the other game? I mean, there, I could see it being matter of fact.
But why did they press release it? I hear you on all that. And when I heard this,
they
this
only
morning,
press released the response. Didn't they only press release the response?
Regardless, why? Why they made it worse by making it a story, yeah, so that it led in the morning, like, shows, yeah, like Today Show did a thing on PR, and here we are in the evening still talking about, right, it, and it's become a bigger story.
You know, I live in a town that has a statue of sportscaster Robert Lee, and we're gonna have to take it down. We're
gonna rebranding. Yeah. See, Robert Lee, that would be great. Robert Lee should have been like, I'm rebranding Robert Lee.
Totally, yeah.
Taking over his name.
The new Confederacy.
Yeah, and no one is gonna play the Jeffersons anymore on TV,
right,
because no. All right, one of the statues, by the way, they went to go protect was Thomas Jefferson's. So at the alt-right rally, that's hence the reference to the Jeffersons. But anyway. Last thing on this is that, look, ESPN probably hasn't dealt with a lot of this, a little bit around the edges, because some conservatives think ESPN is too liberal.
They called them MS-ESPN.
Okay, now the reason for that is, like, they remember they had Rush Limbaugh and they had to let him go because he made racist comments. One, he made racist comments. If you think making racist comments is no big deal, the problem might not be them,
right?
Right, and remember, they're the guys who hired Rush Limbaugh in the first place.
Right,
they're also part of the company that hired Dennis Miller. They've hired conservative after conservative. That's not an issue for them.
This damn liberal network doesn't have any sort of. They can't endure the racists. What kind of liberals?
They should hire Colin Kaepernick to fill in for the
day.
Yeah,
but even so, I don't think that they've ever dealt with this level of trolling. So some of the conservative websites pretended that they had fired Robert Lee.
Yeah.
And so they had to at least come out and say, we didn't fire the guy, we liked the guy. We just moved him to a different game. He's working, he's at the same weekend, it's a different game. Get off our ass.
Right. We had a good idea and Lee surrendered. Thanks. It was good up until
you were holding that in for a while.
I wasn't actually. I just came up with it. We didn't fire him. And I say he surrendered.
Yes. Anyway, they shouldn't have moved him. And now, after making enough fun of them, let's get off their ass.
And let's
love the graphic though behind us. It's cracking me up.
Okay. And hopefully, Virginia beats William and Mary.
I don't know what that means.
I know you don't. That was for you though.
Yeah. Don't worry, they won't.
The University of Virginia.
No bigger fuss has ever been made over Virginia football, so it's pretty good.
That's true. All right, Michael and Nomi, thank you so much. Everybody check out Nomi on youtube.com/TYTpolitics. Everybody check out Michael on I-24 News. And Anna is gonna come back in the next segment, and we have some amazing stories for you guys. And including, like I said, some international outrage at a couple of kids, one doing the Macarena in Saudi Arabia. Find out how that turned out. We'll be right back.